All right, good.
All right, that's ridiculous. I don't think it's flat. I don't know. But the Big Bang, I don't know if that's a fact, fam. I think you want to say that's a theory with some evidence, maybe.
I would say theory and fact are synonymous.
No, I mean, in science.
In science, we don't ever start calling something a theory until it's been proven countless times.
No. All right. When something is a fact, it becomes a law of science.
Nope.
Like the laws of thermodynamics or the laws of physics. There's a bunch of laws in science. When something becomes a law, then it is something you can prove over and over again. This is a fact.
Nope. So theories don't become laws in science. That's not how it goes. There are some like laws are just observations that we make.
No, laws are facts. Laws are something you could prove.
The
laws of thermodynamics. You can prove that. That's a fact.
Physics. In a way, yeah.
That's a fact.
In a way, yeah. Laws do break down, though, but they're just observations.
No, they don't. Laws are absolute.
No, that's not true. The ideal gas law, literally no gas behaves in that way in reality, but it's a very good approximation. Hooke's law for springs breaks down at certain points.
When do the laws of thermodynamics not work?
I'm not aware of any instances of the laws of thermodynamics not working. That is the, if there's any dogma in science, it is thermodynamics. But other laws totally do break down, like gravity and quantum mechanics don't work together. So at certain levels of analysis...
Quantum mechanics tries to explain gravity.
It doesn't.
Against each other.
No.
Just string theory is from quantum mechanics. That's
kind that's, of quantum theory.
No, there ain't no kind of. This is a fact.
It
literally came directly out of quantum mechanics. Literally, I'm not saying this because I'm just pulling shit out of my ass. I'm saying this because I know it. I studied this shit.
Okie doke.
Again, man, by basic middle school science, you're taught that
you are not taught string theory in. Oh, you're okay. Never mind.
No, I'm not talking about string theory. I said you're taught that in science, for something to become a theory, you have to have evidence. But when something is provable and is fact, it becomes a law.
This
is basic middle school definitions.
No, that's not true. So the Earth orbits the sun, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's not a law. Heliocentrism is a theory, and it will always remain a theory. It will never become a law. There are laws that are part of theories. Like, we can't... heliocentrism is describable thanks to some laws, like universal gravitation, for example. But it doesn't work in science that we just keep adding new laws every year or every couple of decades.
I mean, we don't add them every year because again, before something to become a law, it has to be so ridiculously unprovable that it's hard to keep putting things as laws, because for everything we write or say about this stuff, there's always something we cannot prove. So if there's something you cannot prove, it's not a law.
Say that again. There's nothing you can't prove that isn't a law. What exactly did you say?
No, I'm saying if there's any inkling of non-evidence for your theory, it cannot become a law.
Yeah, that's just not how it works. I'm afraid to say.
Hold on. I'm on Google the definition just to make sure I'm not wrong.
I can pull it up for you. Scientific law is a statement describing a fundamental relationship or pattern in nature, confirmed by repeated experiments and observations, often expressed mathematically. Laws explain what happens under certain conditions, but not why. So, yeah, pretty standard. Yeah, laws describe what, while theories explain how and why. Yep, I knew that. Theory does not graduate into a law. So this is what I've been trying to tell you. Theories don't just become laws.
No, but I was taught. They didn't change the definition. I don't know.
Well, I mean, I don't... Like, I was a science teacher for 10 years, and I didn't really focus very much on teaching students the difference between, like, how something becomes a law in a theory. I mean, we would do it on, like, one day, I guess. But, no, laws are, like, we figure out scientific laws, yeah, by doing scientific kinds of investigations, because so many of them have equations built into them, are expressible in an equation. Like, you really have to study it pretty hard. But the law just tells you, this is something we see all the time. It pretty much, it almost universally applies to things. But it's just what we see happening. Whereas theories describe why laws have the properties that they have. So, like, you have an ideal gas law. Why is that? Well, you need a kinetic theory of matter and motion in order to understand why gases behave the way they do, according to the gas law, for example.
Yeah, but you can prove that.
Prove what?
You can, any law, or again, if you could put it into a mathematical equation, it means it's provable.
Well, I would say it's more demonstrable, because we already see the effect of what it is. Now we're just we're formalizing it and giving it, like, mathematical value. So, like, everybody knew that what goes up must come down. That had been known forever. That is universal gravitation. The difference, and what was so revolutionary, was Newton figured out mathematically how to describe it, which gave it immense, like, predictive power, and you could now finally do things with it. But everybody kind of already understood what goes up must come down. And we also understood at that time, although not for very long, but we did understand at that time, finally, yes, the Earth goes around the sun, and the moon orbits the Earth while that happens. That was, unfortunately, kind of a fairly new idea at the time, but that was already known. The laws of gravity just make that you can couch it in, like, hyper-specific terms if you can formalize it mathematically. But theories tell you how something works and what you should expect to find, and we confirm our theories constantly all the time. Like, general relativity is a theory of gravity, but scientists don't go around saying, well, yeah, I mean, we don't know if general relativity is true or not, but we have a book that says it is, or something like that. It's like, no, we have established that general relativity is true as much as we have established that the Earth goes around the sun, or that tables and chairs and people are made of atoms, or that evolution happens. Pythagoras did not invent the Pythagorean theorem. Thomas Edison did not invent the light bulb. George Washington Carver didn't invent peanut butter. Surprised? There are hundreds of more misconceptions you can learn the truth about in my book, Facts That Aren't True. Get your own signed copy or audiobook today. Link in the description.
Here's the thing about the evolution, right? Is there a mathematical equation for evolution?
There kind of is. Yeah, there's this thing called Hardy-Weinberg equilibrium, which is you count the allele frequencies in a population, and then you count them again in the next generation. And what we always find is that the equilibrium does not stay, which just basically means the genetic composition of the population always changes every generation. So that's like, evolution is a law. The theory of evolution is meant to describe to us how and why does it happen, and to what extent, or like how far does it go? What are the implications of it?
What levels of school did you teach?
I taught high schoolers.
High school? What grade? Just out of curiosity.
well, all of them, 9 through 12. It would it just depended on what classes I had and the year. And different schools teach different subjects at different grade levels.
Okay. I've never heard evolution was a law. I've always heard it as it was the theory of evolution.
Well, again, I can tell you from 10 years of experience in the classroom, I pretty much never called it a law because it just wasn't important to say. I didn't feel so. We always talked about the theory of evolution by natural selection. And then we just talked about the evidence. I mean, I didn't really worry about, I didn't worry so much about, you know, the nomenclature or whatever. I just made sure to describe to them the history of it and the evidence behind it. But
and again, I want you to let me flesh this out before you you retort to what I got to say. Just let me flesh this out real quick before you, because what I'm about to say, this is where stuff really usually goes off the rails in these conversations. People start getting emotional and angry. So I just want you to let me just finish what I got to say, and I will let you say what you got to say. Make sense? When I was a kid, I was taught Pluto was a planet. It was a planet. It was taught in my elementary school. It was taught in middle schools. It was taught in high schools. It was taught in colleges. It was universally a scientific fact that Pluto was a planet. Then I got in middle school. And then someone was like, you know what? Pluto is not a planet. We messed up. We think it's a lost moon of, I think it was it Saturn or one of those planets out there. Like, yo, we think this is a lost moon and we messed up. And then by the time I got to high school, around my freshman year, it was like, you know what? Pluto's a planet again. I'm not exaggerating. This is the literal, what I was told about Pluto. All right. This is what I'm not making this up. Then by the time I graduated high school, yeah, Pluto's not a planet. It's a celestial dwarf. It's a planet-like thing. This is what it became by the time I graduated high school, right? Now, Pluto is much closer than the edge of the universe. This is a universally known fact, right? And there are people telling me that they can tell me what is going on at the edge of the universe, that the universe is expanding, but you cannot tell me for certain for over 20 years whether Pluto is a planet. Now, I want you to make that make sense. If we cannot see what's going on with our solar system, how can you tell me what's going on as the universe as a whole? Go ahead, speak.
So classifying things is almost never scientific. Whether or not we decide to categorize Pluto as a planet or not has no weight or bearing on the science behind discovering and understanding planets. That would be the number one thing. So like, this is the only example I can think of, and it's kind of silly, but there are people that get degrees in food sciences, right? And like, we know that foods have nutrients in them, and we know what those nutrients are, and we know that foods have calories. Like we know all that stuff, right? You're with me so far? Okay. Is a hot dog a sandwich?
No.
Okay. Well, if the USDA or whatever, the FDA came out and said hot dogs are sandwiches, and then the next administration overturns that, that doesn't disprove what we know scientifically about nutrition. This is just a subjective category thing. That's what happened to Pluto. We don't, all, if, the scientific stuff about Pluto is, where is it located? How fast is it orbiting? How far away from the sun is it? What is it made of? How many moons does it have? Those sorts of, those are like scientific things about Pluto. Whether or not humans decide to call Pluto a planet, a Kuiper belt object, a trans-Neptunian object, or whatever, or a dwarf planet, whatever, those are much, much less scientific. There's a little bit of scientism in there, but not so much. So this whole thing about like we can't make up our minds about that aspect of it really doesn't have any bearing on the scientific knowledge about Pluto or how we do science.
Well, the problem I have with that is, will we classify Pluto, and this is what I was told, this is not something I'm making up again, how we classify Pluto is to how big we think the planet is, or celestial dwarf, or whatever.
No.
That's what I was told. If it's a celestial dwarf, it's called a celestial dwarf because it's not big enough to be a planet.
I mean, that's close. It's not quite right. The three, because here's the other thing. We just simply, you know how our moon is called the moon?
Mm-hmm.
Well, until the 1600s, we didn't know that any other moon existed. Did you know that?
I mean, it was the 1600s. We didn't know a lot of things back those days. So
yeah,
I was probably right.
So, way back, so for all of human history, if you asked somebody, what is a moon, they would say something like, well, it's an object that orbits a planet, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Well, you know Saturn has rings, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Well, is Saturn's ring a moon? Or are the microscopic pieces of stuff inside Saturn's ring moons or not?
No.
Nobody says that they are, but because we didn't actually know what a moon was because for so long, because the only moon we knew about was ours, it was like, well, once we discover that there are countless other things orbiting every other planet, how do we decide what is a moon and what isn't? It's not really all that scientific and all that precise. These are just definitions of things. So for planets, because we were limited by technology, we only knew of the really big planets that are far away and the smaller planets that are close, so they're easy to see. And then we discovered Pluto in 1930. Some old farm boy named Clyde Tombaugh discovered it. But then we started discovering other things that are about the same size as Pluto, some of them actually bigger, that are in the same area where Pluto is, also orbiting the sun. So then scientists are like, well, this is weird because all these things where Pluto is, they all overlap in their orbits. So what are we going to do now? So they decided the thing that declassified Pluto, according to this naming convention, was a planet has to clear its orbit of debris or whatever. And it doesn't really matter how big the object is for that to happen. I mean, being bigger does help, but that's not like the be-all end-all of it.
I mean, Pluto technically has a moon, I think.
It has a bunch of moons, yeah. It has like eight moons.
I thought Saturn had eight moons. It don't matter.
Well, Saturn has around 70 moons.
Yeah, 70 moons?
Yeah, most of them are only a couple miles across. They're just asteroids. But want to learn how to make people do this?
If that's true, then what? Hold on. This is really complicated.
It's not. This book will be your guide. I debunk all of the common anti-scientific arguments, plus some uncommon ones. Every single copy is personally signed and shipped by me. There's even an audiobook. Link in the description.
See, this is what I'm talking about, man. That shit didn't... I remember having to make that display. Remember that display? Like, every year for science class, I had to go to... I was lazy as shit, right? And I remember very specifically, I'd have to make that fucking model of the planets.
Yeah.
Right? I would either do the model of the planets, or I'd do a volcano for the science fair, because it was mandatory you had to do it.
Yeah, I mean, those are right. They're easy enough to do.
I mean, it's the simplest, the easiest project you're going to do. So I'm either making the volcano, or I'm making the planets. And the mm-hmm. reason why I bring this up, most of the time I did the planets, and I don't remember Saturn having that many moons.
Yeah, Jupiter and Saturn, they both have around 70 moons. Like I said, most of them are really small. They're only a couple miles across. They're just big asteroids, but or medium sized asteroids. But
see what I'm saying? I think they added some moons over the years, man. I don't know, man.
Well, we keep discovering new ones, but we've known it's had a bunch for many, many, many decades.
I'm just saying that also brings into the point I'm trying to say, like, yes, hold on. Yes, they did actually have this. We had to say what was in the planets. We had to say how many moons there were. We had to come up like these 4x4 cards on the moon. I mean, very specifically doing these things, not the moon, but the planets rather.
Yep.
I had to know this. So I do. I mean, it is very possible we know more about them now, but that also brings my point is if we're still learning about the universe around us, how can we say we know some of these things for certain?
Well, I think you should be careful and pick and choose what you say is known versus what we don't quite understand fully yet. But like, we'll talk about this some more. But hold on real quick. You know the whole like purpose of science and function of science is discovery, right?
Of course.
But you keep saying, well, every time we learn something new, it's like it causes some big fucking problem. And I'm like, but science is supposed to do that. What's the big deal?
I'm not saying that.
I'm not.
What I'm saying is it's not a problem that we learn something new. There's never been a problem. My problem is you say you know stuff for a certain and we don't really fully know what we're even looking at yet.
Yeah, so there are... I just don't think that...
Understand what I'm saying?
Know what I'm saying?
Yes, I know what you were saying. You don't have to keep asking.
I know what you mean, but you're drawing kind of this false equivalency where it's like, look, a really long time ago, we knew the Earth existed, we knew the Moon existed, we knew the Sun existed. But everybody thought the Sun went around the Earth. And so when we learned scientifically the truth, where it's the other way around, that really flipped things. But we still knew that there was a Sun and there was a Moon and there was an Earth. So how dramatic was the change? Well, it was really dramatic in one sense, less dramatic in another sense. Now, this stuff with, like, if we just pick Pluto, for example, when we discovered that there are these other things orbiting where Pluto is and we reclassified it, that didn't disprove anything we know about Pluto. It just changed what we classified it as, which I wouldn't call that part of what we know about it. Now, with like the Big Bang or whatever, there's all kinds of stuff we've learned fairly recently about the universe, but none of it disproves that we live in an expanding universe. None of it disproves that the timeline of events for the observable universe essentially goes back about 14 billion years. The new stuff doesn't disprove the old stuff. It's just new stuff that we learn.
Only thing I can say is the reason why I bring this up, like I'm saying, I'm just saying if we cannot, we don't know truly, we truly haven't really mapped out our solar system.
Oh yeah, we have.
I think there's still very much more to learn about just our solar system.
I honestly very seriously disagree. The only more new information we're going to get about our solar system is like we'll find new comets and stuff. There's this really big debate about whether or not there's a planet X. Now, even if there is a Planet X, that will be really fucking cool. But that'll just be one piece of a, I mean, it's like, it would be the equivalent. Again, like it would be the equivalent of arguing like before the 1800s, we didn't know Antarctica existed. So it's like claiming we don't know anything about Earth, or we didn't know anything about Earth before Antarctica was discovered. It's like, no, all the other stuff we knew was still true. And this other thing, even though it was a big thing, it actually didn't add really all that much. What it absolutely did not do was subtract anything. It just added some new stuff.
Well, also, I would argue, because I've actually, this has nothing to do with this argument, but it kind of adds to this. When you're saying in the 1800s, you found that Antarctica was a place, at the same time, the map of the planet was still being developed. It wasn't, there were still different maps of how just the trade route from Africa to America was. Like, it was still being learned. Like, what I'm trying to say is, like, we still to this day don't know every single species on our own planet. It's still being developed. There are still creatures being found to this day, let alone something 100 million miles away. 100 million light years away, I meant to say.
Yeah, so
I'm saying, how can you definitively say 100 million light years away, you know it's expanding? That doesn't sound crazy to you?
Well, because it's a scientific law. It's called the Hubble-Lemaître law.
Explain, what does that mean?
So, you know how like when a car, ambulance, whatever goes by, it goes, meow.
Mm-hmm.
So when something moves away from you, energy that it releases gets stretched out, so the sound waves get stretched out, so it sounds lower pitched, right? It's called the Doppler effect. Light can do that. So, like, I'm sure you know, but, like, you know, light can be all the colors of the rainbow. But what's the difference? Well, red light is made of longer wavelengths. Green light, the wavelengths are shorter. Blue light, they're, like, the shortest, right?
All right, but this is so, all right.
I'm explaining it to you. I need less than 30 seconds. So when we look at galaxies, the farther away they are, the light from them becomes, we say, red shifted. So the light is shifted to the stretched out end of the spectrum more and more and more the farther away they get. So that's how we know that they're moving away from us.
Right, this is the biggest problem I have with this issue, right? And again, I could be wrong on anything I'm saying. I'm not arguing what I'm saying is fact. This is right in the science books, because I don't know. I'm not going to act like I do, right? But this is the biggest issue I have with everything being said right here. This is the issue, right? If I took a laser pointer, right? And I'm pointing at the wall from my bed right now, right? My bed from my wall is about 5-10.
Are you still there?
Stream of red light from my bed to the wall, correct?
You cut out after you said...
Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you now. After you said you shine your laser on the wall, you started cutting out.
All right, I'm gonna say it again just in case you didn't hear it.
Yeah.
From my bed to my wall is about 5 or 10 feet, something like that, right?
Mm-hmm.
If I took a red laser right now and pointed it from my bed to the wall, it would be a steady stream of light.
Yep.
Correct?
Yep.
If I go further back, the light would start to dissipate, correct?
Yeah, the light spreads out.
Correct. It would dissipate. That's what, I'll say spread out just for it to be simpler, so you understand what I'm saying.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I believe I know what you are saying. Yeah.
And if I further out even more, it's going to spread out even more. And if I go out about 100 feet, 200 feet, it's going to be like this big circle thing that's going to barely show any light anymore.
Yep.
Correct?
Yep.
Now, if I just took from the initial measurement, right, from my bed to the wall, right? And I scaled it and said this would be a constant for 100 million miles, because this is the only thing I can measure right now. There will be no way of me knowing that it's going to dissipate if I stretch it out, if I just did it just off of that. And I said, I know for a fact this would be a constant for, let's say, a mile. If I said, because of what I can see here, I can only see between 5 and 10 feet, that this is shining at this particular speed and this particular distance. I know if I did it even more from a longer distance, that would be a bad, it would be bad math to do that, correct? Because there's no way I can know. Because I can only see.
I cannot tell what you're trying to say at all.
Okay, I'm going to say it again, and maybe if I spin it a little bit better, maybe you can understand what I'm trying to say.
Well, can you start out by saying what you think scientists are telling us that they can't know? Because that'll help me understand your analogy.
I mean, that's exactly what I'm saying. But I'm saying, if I only use the example of the light from my bed to the wall, because that's the only way it's the only length of light I could see.
Right.
I would not know that it would dissipate if I took it out further, because I can't do that. This is the only foreseeable, in this particular instance I'm using you, I could only see light going from my bed to the wall.
I get that, but what are you comparing this to? What is it that the astronomers are telling you that you're saying, therefore, when they say blank, they don't know that?
I'm saying we only know how light works on Earth. We don't know how light would work a million miles away.
Well, what makes you think that the laws of physics are different a million miles away?
Because there is a lot of things that could happen to light and gases and all kinds of shit from a million miles away.
Well, yeah, but no way we know that. There are things more than a million miles away that we communicate with. We have rovers on Mars, and we communicate with them. If being far away meant that light just doesn't behave the way we think it does, then we would know that, because we wouldn't be able to communicate with any of our satellites or orbiters or rovers that are on Mars, the moon, Jupiter, Saturn.
You think SpaceX is going to Mars?
Say that again.
You think SpaceX is going to Mars?
Oh, I mean, they might. It's hard to say. I mean, they probably will. NASA's going to, so NASA might just contract them. So, I mean, I don't think SpaceX would never do it. It's going to be on their own. They would never do it. It's going to be contracted through the U.S. government, or accomplished by the government, and they'll contract them.
I don't know, man. Elon Musk been saying he's been saying he's going to Mars for a long time now.
Yeah, no, you and I are going to see people go to Mars. I don't know about land on Mars. I think probably, but we'll definitely orbit Mars in our lifetime. But I'm just saying, SpaceX as a private company is not going to do that. They're going to either be contracted by NASA, or SpaceX is going to sort of, like, how do I say this? You know, like when your city builds like a new road, you know, it's a private contracted company that does it, but it's bought and paid for with tax dollars. It's like SpaceX might be the ones doing it, but it's going to be funded by, you know, NASA and the government.
I don't know where you live at. Maybe they do it different, but I don't know. Like when they pave our roads, that shit literally says Bay County fucking road makers or whatever the fuck it says on there. It has like the stamp of the county on our shit.
I mean, it differs a little bit from place to place, I'm sure. Yeah, but like my wife is a teacher. They just rebuilt their school. Well, they didn't rebuild the school, but they rebuilt parts of it. And so that's paid for with property taxes and other stuff. But it was a private company that went out and did it. It's a company that has contracts with the state of California and the county and all that. But this is like not important at all. But anyways, no, but I mean, yeah, like the idea that light is like that whole thing you said about laws being facts. In order for you to sit here and argue, well, but we don't know that the light we see from distant parts of the galaxy or different parts of the universe is whatever what we think it is, means you have to go back on that stuff you're talking about with respect to laws.
No, I'm saying, well, light, I mean, even by the definition of the law we looked up, it said under particular circumstances. But I'm saying, what I'm trying to say is light could get distorted over 100 million light years. That's what I'm trying to say. It can get distorted. Well, it gets stretched.
We know that. We know what does that to it. Like, it's known, but space is mostly empty.
I mean, 100 million light years is, I don't know. There's a lot of stuff that can happen between here and 100 million light years.
You are underestimating how empty space is. It is so fucking empty.
I don't know.
Well.
But like, I mean, it's been nice talking to you, man.
This video and all my videos is on my Patreon ad-free. And you can get a free copy of my first book by being a member too. Plus, your name will appear in the end credits. Thank you.